What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny's The Mandalorian Breakdown for the finale. This is the end of the road for now, but do not fret. We will be back, of course, for Ahsoka in just a few short months. I'm Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by the saddest guy I know, Barrett Courtney.
Mandalorians are stronger together, Tim. Also, just really quick shout out. I'm going to miss that little Milk Mommy Grogu face.
Yeah.
It's going to be our last time seeing it for like a couple.
I hate it.
It's going to be a couple years, I think, till we
feels
get a
like
season four, question mark, whatever. Like,
yeah, because when they were shooting, as season one was coming out, they were shooting season two, and then season two and Book of Boba Fett were both being shot like so close together that people assumed it was season three of Mando.
Right.
Season four is not being shot yet. So I think we might be a ways out. What do you think, Anthony Carboni?
Oh, hi. I think, yeah, we've got a little bit of a break until we see Din, both Dins again. I'll tell you what. I think I really enjoyed this finale a lot. Mm. I enjoyed it so much.
There's going to be a lot to get into real quick. Let me do the little rigmarole, because, of course, this is the Kinda Funny screencast. You can get it on youtube.com/kindafunny, roosterteeth.com as videos. If you want a podcast, search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny screencast, and we will be right there for you. If you want to get the show ad-free, patreon.com/kindafunny is where you want to go, just like our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus, James Hastings, Casey Andrew, Nathan Lamothe, and Al Tribesman have done. We appreciate all of you so very, very much. A little housekeeping for you in the screencast realm, in the entertainment realm of things. Lots going on over here at Kinda Funny. Of course, right now you're watching or listening to the Mandalorian finale breakdown. That is not the only screencast going up today. Me and Rocco from Mega 64 are going to sit down and talk about the Power Rangers Once and Always Netflix 30-year reunion special.
A time to be Tim Geddes.
Oh, dude, for real. I'm Tim Geddes-ing hard today.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be fun. And you can check that out later today. If you like Star Wars, which guess what? I assume you do. What's happening, Barrett?
Ooh, later today, if you're watching this the day that we're recording this, over on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, we are premiering my next video essay, where I'm on the books to do four of those. This is the second one coming out, and it's all about why Jedi Fallen Order is such a special game to me, my favorite Star Wars video game, and my second favorite piece of Star Wars media, second only to Empire Strikes Back, and just kind of as a retrospective of like what made that game special and why it kicks ass. Did I want the headline to be "Why Jedi Fallen Order Kicks Ass"? Yes. Did I think that was going to work as a YouTube headline? No.
YouTube's in a place right now.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's in a place and a time.
Yep.
Go check that out. It'll be premiering at 2 p.m. Pacific today if you're watching this, and it'll still be up later for those who are watching later and listening on podcast services around the globe. Very excited. Roughly
that.
30 minutes of just me just talking about why that game kicks ass, and kind of like, I think it might be a good tone setter for Jedi Survivor next week.
Yes, it's excellent. I have seen a lot of it because I watched them record it. Y'all are in for a treat. Go check that out later. But let's get right into it. We've been talking week after week. Oh, also shout out to Sage. She couldn't make it today again. Go send her some love. Just, you know, she'd just make her feel happy.
That kind of funny best friend love out there.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Hit her up.
She's not having
Sage
a week
on Twitter. But she will make her return. At some point.
Sage Ryan will return in the Ahsoka series.
Carboni, I cut you off there. What do you think about this episode?
Boy, oh boy. I think a lot of things. I think this was a very satisfying ending to what a lot of people feel was a very uneven season. And they're, you know, and I understand why people feel that way. I enjoyed the season a lot, but I understand why people feel that way. But I think that this finale had everything that you would want to come out of this season and this season's plot lines. It had great moments for every character. It had some real character growth as well. And I think it made some things explicit that we were wondering about for a little while, particularly a haul of Giancarlo Esposito's. just soaking in their what I can only assume are our flashback tubes.
I love that there's
the
a plural
effect.
A plural on Esposito's there.
Yes. I really liked it. It felt, I don't know how else to say it, except it felt very freaking Star Wars in a season where they were trying a lot of things and poking at a lot of new stuff to see, like, hey, does this feel Star Wars to you? Is this Star Wars? They brought it back in the finale to something that I think felt very classically Star Wars. And I thought it was very satisfying. I don't know. How'd y'all feel?
Barrett?
Yeah, I'm kind of similarly where Carboni is at. I think this season has been a bumpy ride, and kind of looking at what the show has been so far, like, I would say I would still probably, at the end of the day, call this the weakest season of the show. And I think that's because there is a lot of experimenting of, like, what can we do with Star Wars? What can we do with Mandalorian Star Wars? And just kind of throwing things at a wall and seeing what sticks. And I think some of it worked, some of it did not. But these last two episodes I've had a really fun time with. And yeah, going right back to what Carboni was saying, it feels like pulpy Star Wars, you know? And I think that was in a really fun sense, these last two episodes. A lot of great action, a lot of just fun, silly, just moments of, you know, good versus evil clashing heads, kind of seeing where Mando and Grogu end up at the end of the season, I thought was, like, a cute little, like, bow tie to this season. But again, it kind of makes me wonder of, like, where does the rest of the show go? I honestly, like, feel like they wrapped it up in such a way of, like, maybe they, like, if they never do a fourth season, like, this could be the end, and this is just, you know, Mando and Grogu going out on their adventures and stuff like that. And so, I don't know, I enjoyed it, but it didn't leave me being like, holy fuck, what a finale. Like, it didn't have that Luke Skywalker
season
moment.
Season 2's finale.
Yeah, season 2's finale type of moment. But there were still a lot of great moments that, like, I was left satisfied, but not like, I need to know the next thing that happens in this particular show. And there were some things that I wanted to be set up for shows coming out later this year that weren't, especially when we've had a season of titles that have double meanings for the episodes.
The spies. There's only one spy.
Also, yeah, who was the spy last week besides the one from Coruscant? And then also, you know, I know it was me setting up my own, setting myself up for disappointment with the meaning of the return, which, you know, I know, face value, the Mandalorians returning to Mandalore, fucking awesome. I love how this all kind of, like, wraps up, and we'll get into that, but it's like, who else is returning? And I know, like, he's not making his big return yet, because they're going to save that for Ahsoka, but I would have liked a nice little,
listen,
just a little voice, just being like, Gideon's dead? Well, that sucks, you know? Like, just something at the end.
The blue boy is coming. Is it not enough for you to have confirmation that the blue boy is coming after waiting for so long?
No, it is good enough, but it was just like, again, it didn't make me excited for, like, oh, like, we gotta wait, like, 4 months for Ahsoka. Like, it didn't keep me, like, hooked into the whole Mandoverse, because Ahsoka's a part of that, right? It ended on a weird circle.
Very, very, cut. Very bizarre.
So, like, not Star Wars. It felt so weird. My really only gripe with the episode last night was just, like, the last scene. I liked the scene. Felt like it was a very weak way to end the season.
Yeah. This, I think, is exactly how this season needed to end. And, like, this finale fit this season well, I think, for everything that they were going for. I really liked it and enjoyed watching it, despite not really thinking it was that good. And I've been that way with a lot of the Star Wars shows for a while now. And that brings a lot of joy and a lot of, like, confusion at points. And I feel like this episode did just that. A lot of fun things to watch. A lot of the fights were super cool.
Oh, yeah.
Why I like Star Wars, this delivered. I struggle to really, really, really say I don't like this and complain about it in a way that I'm mad at it, because so much of it is exactly what I want to see, which is, like, cool laser swords hitting each other in cool ways and, like, laser shields having to be
told
to turn
off. You just
want to
see the action figures kind of, like, match up against each other in a video game-like sense. We'll talk about that scene in a second.
Oh, yeah.
That was sick as hell.
So we've been talking about, thank you for saying that, because really my point and what I want to talk about this finale is, we've talked about Mandalorian, the show, all three seasons functioning very much like video games.
Mm-hmm.
And in many different ways, I think that's kind of evolved. I think one way is the look of it, obviously, because of the reliance on the volume. It just kind of already creates that video game cutscene vibe. And when they lean into that, I think there's a lot of fun to be had. And this season leaned in. Mm-hmm. The random boss encounters. Think about how many bosses were in this, and mini bosses, and like giant monsters.
Challenge rooms.
And like spider, mechanical spiders. And like, there was just like a lot of stuff in this that I was like, yeah. Hey, man, it's kind of, it's fun. And
I
then
think him, that goes, you know, and I think that goes back to, I think that goes back to Favreau wanting this to be a more of a kung fu sort of story. You know what I mean? Mm. A wandering samurai week to week. Fighting a new show,
and you definitely
thing,
get that vibe.
Fun.
Like, I understand that from the interview at the end of this episode, right? You're like, okay, this is the show he wants to set up for seasons.
And so leaning into that more, though, where I think the video game stuff started to kind of get in the way of this season and this episode. I feel like, so there was cool elements like him downloading the map and then getting access to it. I'm like, of course, I'm gonna love that stuff.
Yeah.
But I do feel like. This season in particular felt like loading up an open world game that you haven't played in like 10 years and then just doing some side quests here and then flying over there, fast traveling here, doing this thing. And on top of that, with a lot of the plot development, a lot of the way the characters of where they are and who they like, who they don't like, all that stuff really kind of feels like a video game of you tried something and died. You try it again, slightly different and died. We're resetting. We're just going to continue. Like the fact that they destroyed the Darksaber is like,
I love it.
I love it.
It pissed me off. And
really?
Because they're going to bring it back.
That's two out of three loves. Of course they're going to bring it back.
And it's just like, then why destroy it? It just feels like this is what Mandalorian is like,
we're
going to
do something cool and then we're going to walk it back.
Just to walk it back and then do it slightly differently again. And
because it's not, I hope they don't. I hope they don't bring it back. The Darksaber. In that moment, it's not the Darksaber. It's a symbol.
I get it.
For the symbol that it was in that moment where it's like Gideon has turned everything against her and can crush everything. And also Bo-Katan leaving old beliefs behind. It's a symbol there. And of course they'll fix it. And when they fix it, it'll be a little different and it'll be a little new. And that's a symbol as well, you know, and that's okay.
Dude, totally. It's just, I just feel like it can get a little bit like, well, this doesn't really feel like it can ever hit these major highs. Cause it is kind of, we just see things happening and sometimes there's rhyme and reason. Sometimes there's not. And and those are both on equal playing fields. Like what they take seriously and what they don't seems like they don't really mind as long as people are having fun. And again, I'm having fun with all of that. It's just really like some of the rush stuff of these last two episodes feeling great. But also, well, guess what? Moff Gideon's back and now he's gone again, right? And here's the question, though. Is he? Or was that a clone?
How many clone? That's the thing, right? How many clone?
I don't
Could
know.
Be is more that
the
clone?
Only base? Is that the only base with clone? Who knows?
I mean, let's go off on that. What do we think? Was that Gideon or was that a clone?
Oh, man, that's so good. That's such a good thing to think about. I think whether it was Gideon or a clone, I think functionally they've destroyed their Gideon that they've been after for so long. If a new Gideon shows up, which could happen, I'm very interested in seeing what form a new Gideon would take. How close are they getting to a Force-sensitive Gideon? You know, there was a lot of this stuff harkens back, and I'm sure Barrett thought a lot about this as well. A lot of this stuff harkens back to the original Heir to the Empire stuff and the original Thrawn stuff, where Thrawn does have a clone in a room like that. Not like a whole hallway of them, but has a clone that he's building, and Luke's got to decide.
What's the clone's name?
The clone's name is just going to be Thrawn. There is a Luke clone that's Luke with two U's.
Yes, exactly.
We're not talking
Luke
about
with two
that.
U's. Fucking love
we're
that.
Talking about we're talking about regular Luke and this Thrawn clone, and he's like, well, I can't just destroy this clone. This clone hasn't done anything wrong yet. It's
right.
A completely
it's its own
new,
being.
It's its own being, but in the end, winds up having to flood the clone chamber the same way Din did. And I'm wondering, like, if there is a clone of Moff Gideon, what's that clone like? Good guy, bad guy?
Does he have a mustache? Does he not?
Mustache, no mustache? What's up? How many Pershings are there? I was really hoping for more Pershings.
Me too. Yeah, that was an interesting thread, but maybe that's something we read too much into, or maybe that's going to be something followed up in like 10 years on a different show.
And they'll figure it out.
Because that's what
can I tell you?
Filoni, like,
can I tell you,
doing.
By the way, I'm bummed that I wasn't here last week for Barrett's reaction to Pelion being on the Shadow Council. And all of that Thrawn forward stuff.
Yeah,
it must have been a very exciting week. And the Hux's dad,
ancestor.
playing yeah. being played by what's-his-face's brother. All yeah. very great. That scene kicked ass. And again, that's why I was hoping there would be some more build-up to what the mm-hmm. early remnants of the First Order is up to, especially with that big tease last episode. And I know that's not entirely yeah. Mando's thing, right? Like, that's it's not like they ended season two really with that. It was like you get a mention of Thrawn, you see Ahsoka for an episode, but then she fucks off for the last two episodes. So,
well, I think I think they got to build that up, right? We've got a lot of time before we have to see an organized First Order, and if we rush to that, well, then we've already hit our finish line, right? Mm. And so we've got to be aware of that as fans. Is like, if the moment we get up to The Force Awakens, we don't lose this TV stuff by any means, but this TV stuff then has to focus on a much more stringent timeline and put itself in, you know, the little bits and pieces and little holes that we have in those films. Admittedly, the holes get larger as you go farther through the films.
Right.
But I don't necessarily want to see us rush to the creation of a First Order.
No, and that's not what I was looking for.
Boy, Luke.
I was just looking for more of just like that crew, you know, it doesn't have to lead right into this is called the First Order now. Just like, yo, we got a little bit of a tease. It would have been nice to kind of end something with more of it. Cause yeah, it feels like the Gideon, to me, it feels like the Gideon chapter is close. I don't think we see him again.
I think so too. Like, I think season four, they would be well served to be free of Gideon.
I do think some of the research he was working on will set up Snoke in some way, shape, or form. He was looking to create artificial being or whatever you want to call him that can also be guaranteed to have and wield the Force.
Yeah.
Which we know Snoke was in a way, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah,
they mentioned Project Necromancer last episode, right, which we can assume is bringing Palpatine back. And so they've got their base research. Now, Gideon says that the research never made it because Gideon just wants a bunch of Gideons.
Right.
So now we've got the idea of like, we've got Elia who knows that this research exists, knows mm-hmm. what Gideon was up to, was loyal to Gideon as a warlord. But now what does Elia do with that information, and right. who do they now serve in the Shadow Council, if anyone? I think the fact that we were introed to the Shadow Council, but we didn't get much more, to me is good, because it would have been like that episode of The Mandalorian that was in the middle of Boba Fett. Mm. I want the Shadow Council. The Shadow Council belongs to Ahsoka, I think. Mm. The Shadow Council is for Ahsoka and Hera and Sabine to deal with. And I don't necessarily want that to become too entrenched with Din's day to day.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I do think that that everything you said, I agree with. I do think that led to a very disjointed season here of like, what were they trying to do? But now that it's done and we can look at everything they accomplished this season, they did put a bow on a lot of the stories and put the toys in places where season four, to me, kind of feels pretty clear of what it could be in a way that I think mm-hmm. makes sense as an additive thing to keep Din as a cool character, because he is a cool character, and mm-hmm. so is Grogu, Din Grogu. Having them go back to being bounty hunters.
Was it on your bingo card that his first name is actually Jaren?
No, man. Like, just weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
Like, I don't like it. It's just why?
Because Bo-Katan has a last name, you know?
Bo-Katan Crees, but yeah, Din Djarin. Who knows where Din is originally from?
Because Satine's last name is also Crees, correct?
In the same episode.
Crees Satine or Crees, yeah.
But maybe, but hold on, let's walk it back here for a second, right? Because this is an extremist cult group that
but Paz was Vizsla's son. His name's not like that.
No, his name is Ragnar Vizsla of House Vizsla. But remember that Din does remember his name and remembers his parents, but not very well. He could be from, they're all from different cultures. They're not all, you know, they are part of the Mandalorian, you know, the Mandalorian society, but you know, he just comes from somewhere where their last name's first. And, you know, Paz Vizsla didn't. I'm like, okay with it. I just didn't have it on my bingo card. That's all. I thought his first name was Din.
Yeah. Cause that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think that season four, if they kind of have this reset point to refocus on it being about bounty hunting and like actually more like Monster of the Week style things of them building the story, because they set it up perfectly with now the bounty hunters would be officially under the New Republic. Like, he'd be going
not officially,
out,
and I love that, too.
Yeah, like, it's good bounty hunting, and, like, him going out and, like, finding all the Imperial remnants and all that from the Shadow crew, whatever the hell it's called.
Shadow Realm.
what was it called? The crew of the Shadow people?
The Shadow Council.
the Shadow Council.
I want to see the meeting where they're like, yo, what the fuck do we call ourselves?
Totally. I just feel like that is a cool thing with the spy. With Elia.
Yeah.
Her storyline being where her being part of the New Republic and, like, obviously working
being
with the Empire.
Spy,
and, like, now kind of being the... I love Elia that they killed off... Gideon, and they killed off Pershing. So now it's like, here's this new character that's essentially going to be the conduit
kind of
for
like,
their
yeah, in the
story.
Middle of all of that. Yeah. And I like that the way it ended with, you know, I was a little confused of like, all right, well, now Grogu is an official kind of Mandalorian apprentice. You can leave Mandalore now. I was like, why would they, what's that all about? Okay, but I guess they're going to live on Navarro and kind of have their own little house, which is cute, but like that like decision from the armor didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But again, I like that they're bringing Mando out of it a little bit, because I know when they talked about the, you know, the at Celebration, the movie that Filoni is directing that's going to tie up the Mando like era stuff, I doubt that Did is the main character in that, and I feel like he would be more of a supporting role. Again, I could be very much wrong, but then like having him just kind of be the side like guy who's like just out doing his bounty hunting stuff, and then when the crew comes together and they're like, we need backup, and then he comes in and like the second or third act or whatever, like I think that'd be a
he's
cool
a
setup.
Street level Avenger.
I want to talk a lot about this in just a second, but real quick, remember you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to get this show ad free, but for everyone else, here is a word from our sponsors. When it comes to the movie that you're talking about, Barrett, I do think that Din will probably be more involved than like just coming in later. I think he will be one of the core main cast. Like, I bet he's real big on the poster, you know?
Yeah.
And it's because Mandalorian, Din Djarin, he's fucking cool. I just feel like objectively, you look at him, he's cool. His weapons are cool. His ship's cool. Everything's cool. But
I'd
also
be surprised if
he's
he was
a fucking dork. I love when he's moving around, and it's like, I love that the coolest looking guy ever is also just this fucking loser.
Jiu-jitsu nerd?
That too.
Like, I thought he was Nick Scarpino at the beginning of the
episode.
Sasha
Banks, man. It's great.
That was really cool.
Oh my gosh. I think them like, hey, now leave Mandalore was more of like, she mentioned you had a master that took you on your journeys, and now it's time for you to take your apprentice on his journeys. And so I think it's like, hey, you got it's bring your son to work day. You've got to train this kid. You've taken on an apprentice. And now it's time to go out and teach him. And like, maybe, you know, where the first season was like Mando earning his armor, like maybe they're going to do the same thing for a little baby boy. Maybe
he only got one piece of armor this season, and we didn't even really see it a lot in action. So, maybe
although it was always they did show it a little bit under his robes all the time, which I thought was nice.
Yeah.
I also want to like talk about Grogu in this episode and just the Kanan Jarrus moment that Grogu gets at the end.
Oh,
when
moment.
Grogu comes into his powers. I loved that moment, and I love that it took all three of them to take him down, working together, being a family, a mom and a dad and a baby.
That was
and
great.
It was so good. And that moment where the Praetorians take IG-12, our little baby robot mech boy.
Oh my God, they just start cutting it up.
And start like, and the door starts closing, and you see Din just like become a dad for
a
moment. And I'm just like, oh, that was so good.
So good.
Yeah, and the back and forth fight with Din and Grogu versus the guard, right? Like, I action-wise, like that was like one of my favorite moments of like Grogu just kind of using the Force in little ways just to fuck with them. And
video
then,
game shit, man.
Yeah,
it felt like God of War, Atreus, and Kratos.
And then going back to the one where it's like the laser grid hallway fight scene where felt like, what's the game that we love? Sifu, where it's like, all right, we're going to like two at a time. Every enemy you beat, you upgrade your weapons and then you go on to the next round. It was so cool. And then
I love that since Daredevil, every show's got to have their hallway fight scene.
Yeah. Man. It's
and
just
I
cool.
love a hallway fight scene.
Yeah.
That was very good. R5 getting his props. A lot of fan theories about R5 confirmed this season, which is fun.
Love that. Little mouse droid.
What's with the mouse droid being like, my idea is to bring more mouse droids just to ram into you? That's not the purpose of a mouse droid, is it? I feel like they would go warn other people, or was it
some of them were warning other people while some of them were just trying to keep him in place.
And to be fair, like the actual people were going off and fighting the Mandalorian. So he got all he could, which was his other mouse droid.
I love it. And they're just trying to like knock into him. They're just like bonk, bonk,
yep.
bonk.
Yep.
I want to say, like, speaking of the getting people to help, I love when Moff Gideon gets his Vader moment, and he's like, he puts on his helmet and he says, "I'll take care of them myself." And yeah. They were really hammering home that he's the Vader of this series in a way where I was like, you could dial it back a notch, but I also love his power armor.
That was an eye roll moment for myself. I remember writing that down. Of like, really, we're gonna do the "I'll take care of him myself" like kind of like Vader callback, which like I know like a Filoni and gang have been known to do throughout their shows, and every time I do it, it's just like, I don't know, man.
So much of this stuff was so cool. I just wish that we got there differently later. I don't know what it is, but it felt wrong to have him have this moment. I loved the moment, but like
we don't get to spend a lot of time with him. We barely get to see him this season, and it felt like kind of like they wanted to earn that moment of him getting the full Beskar suit. And it's like, but what, like, the last time we really saw you in a significant way was 2 years ago at the end of season two, and you were defeated, and like everything that you've been working to build towards has been off camera. And that, like, that feels like such a weird choice when I feel like Rebels, I feel like, did such a solid job of like showing the different perspectives from not just the crew on the Ghost, and like actually building up and earning villain moments.
I think it's particularly interesting because it comes down to that pacing thing that we've talked about before with Disney Plus and with limited series. Mm. Whereas to us, it feels like 2 years in a very long time. We're only 6 hours. It's only 6 hours later in the show that Gideon comes back. But you're right. It like, you know, they made little points of it. They were like, "Hey, Gideon disappeared. I heard he died." Like, we start hearing that like within the first, you know, episode or two of the series. But you're right in that they didn't spend a lot of time sort of bringing that back. Mm-hmm. What I do want to say though is something that I thought was very interesting about that the final conflict is, we've been talking for the last few episodes about how, I don't know, like the look and the feel of the show keeps going up and down and up and down, right? As it does with all this Disney Plus stuff. And I think now we know what they were saving their money for and their pennies. And it's because Rick Famuyiwa wanted that very good Mandalorians versus Scout Trooper.
Jesus Christ.
Jetpack battle.
Her with the Darksaber flying through.
So good.
Leading the charge. Anytime the armor hit someone while flying around with her tools was the fucking most badass stuff ever, like, in this season.
The armor,
so cool.
I loved it. The Mandos are just like, we don't need anything. Give me a stick.
Yeah.
And honestly, a stick and I will finish this.
That whole scene where we see all the ties flying out, as I was watching this, I was like, this is why I love Star Wars. This is it.
And
it's these moments that this is on TV every week, and I get to just have fun fucking watching it.
I love that we ended with like a little bit more of like a happier, again, bow tied around things. Like, Axe wasn't a spy. The armor wasn't a spy. Like, interesting theories, but it, like, that felt wrong and dirty to me, like when we talked about it these last couple weeks. But I love Axe going down with the ship, but then, you know, the ship's about to hit it, but then he still gets out. And you're like, hell yeah, good for him.
I still think the armor is going to be a source of more of a source of conflict than a sort. Like, right now, she's a unifying force, but I think that she has a very specific way. You know, this is the way. There is a creed. And she's like, right now, she's like, all of us need to be together. But the moment they're all together, I wonder if she's not going to push for their ways to become the main ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
That's something that I still see happening. But Axe Woves, I just want to say, has the worst aim of any Mandalorian. He had an entire Imperial cruiser, and he only shot down one of those interceptors with two turrets. He's the worst shot in the history of Star Wars.
He was trying to control like a ship, like being aimed down at the planet. He's only one
Axe
man.
Axe Wolves' entire thing in this show is to lose to everyone.
Yeah.
Axe Wolves is there to be punched in the face, and that's fine.
Yep.
But he's bad at being a Mando.
You know who wasn't there to get punched in the face? Boba Fett.
That's fine.
It's fine.
The Mandalorian. It's not a story. His story is hanging out with the space kids with their space vests, but getting rid of spikes off of Tatooine.
I don't think he considers himself part of that at all.
I don't know, man. Like, it's not one of those things where I wanted it or needed it, like, especially after the Book of Boba Fett. I don't need more Boba Fett. I just think that it's bizarre for the story that this show was telling of getting all the Mandalorians together that they wouldn't get. In our minds and hearts, the Mandalorian, that we know they interact together and stuff, especially when...
But he's the least Mandalorian there's ever been.
Yeah. Because of Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau making their...
No, that's a George Lucas decision.
Yeah. That's always been his thing, is like he is the lone samurai. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He is the guy who like has his own code and lives by his own rules. Even when they made an entire army out of him, and he said, "That's fine, just give me one. I want one son, and that's going to be my whole life." You know what I mean? That's how Jango raised Boba, and that's who Boba is.
But I think the whole point of this season has been like, hey, Mandalorians can be many things, but we still are better together. And so him being something different, I still think is totally aligned with whether it's Bo, who is alone when we see her in the beginning of this, Bo's crew with Sasha Banks and them. Exactly. Just like that. And then the more religious ones. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. I just think that
he's a retired man who's running an entire planet full of punk kids on Vespas. He doesn't have time.
Even if they went to him, I doubt that he'd be like, I'll help y'all out, maybe. But like, yeah, Tatooine.
Do you know what I think? Okay. Do you know what I think the unevenness of this season really shows? I think it really showed what I think the place of the Mandalorian is in all of these upcoming series, which is now the Mandalorian, kind of like, I mean, it's like Iron Man was for the MCU. He's the focal point, right? We know that the pirates that he ran up against in that episode, we know that they are going to be a big bad in Skeleton Crew. We know that they're going to show up, right? We know that we're meeting all of these different cultures and these different planets. We're setting up all these political factions. And his job, I think, in this next season, and I think his job has always been to take us to these new places, introduce us to these new people, introduce these ideas, and then maybe if these ideas take hold and fans really love them, they spin off into their own thing, which in some ways feels a little utilitarian, and I understand why people are a little like, about that, because you're right, it does make for sometimes a season that doesn't feel as thematically
coherent
together as it could be, but I think as more and more Star Wars TV shows are introduced, the pressure is going to be off the Mandalorian to be that show that has the one long main Star Wars story, and will be able to be more of this like episode by episode, case by case bounty hunter show that I think, you know, Favreau and Famuyiwa have wanted to make. Whereas like Filoni is very much the deep lore man, you know what I mean? And now there's much more deep lore going on that he's got his toes in. And, you know, maybe now we can just have the Mando be like fun video game adventure of the week show.
I mean, it's what all of it is, right? Like when you really even just think about the show being the Mandalorian, Boba Fett being Boba Fett, Boba Fett being in the Sarlacc pit, then in the book, it's said that, for somebody finds his armor. And then we get that guy in the show, and then we eventually get that armor off of him. Boba Fett comes back, gets that armor. It's like just so funny how many like That's what storytelling is. It's just a series
it's
of decisions.
Poetry. It
but
rhymes,
it's just so
Tim.
Funny how yeah. it's literally just like, let's take a thing and move the thing over and over yeah. and over.
Like, let's kill off IG-11, then bring him back. Let's separate Mando and Grogu, bring him back, and not the main show. Yeah, a lot of weird decisions. But again, I think to bring it all back to this episode and the future of this, I think this episode felt like a nice reset for the future. And like you and Carboni have been saying, like a nice bringing back this show to maybe what it was originally inspired to be, was just a weekly fun adventure of the week kind of show, which I'm down for, honestly. Yep. I just want to shout out the Mythosaur down below.
Shout out the Mythosaur!
In the living, in the, what is it, the still waters? The living waters? I always forget what kind of waters they are.
Minnetonka.
And I like that the Mythosaur was just kept as more of like a symbol of the Mandalore and the fire igniting for them coming together. So I'm glad that there wasn't a big kaiju fight.
For now, it will happen.
And I want to say that I think this is the end of this season was a great moment for Clone Wars fans and for people who have been following Bo-Katan and who've been following like the Krees and the Vizslas and all that stuff for years. This was a very cool ending. While it has a particularly Star Wars problem of like it within the context of the Mandalorian, it is not as emotionally punchy as it is within the context of the larger Star Wars lore that unfortunately you had to watch 7 seasons and a of a cartoon to understand.
Carboni, will Bo-Katan ever fucking mention her sister on a live action show, or are we just pretending Satine just doesn't exist in any way, shape, or form?
I think
just a mention, you know, to be like, she feels like it's her responsibility to bring it back because her sister used to be the leader of Mandalorian and she died, and she feels like it's her responsibility now. I just want an acknowledgement of this lady that everybody was in love with, especially Obi-Wan Kenobi, Tim. Just some respect for Satine, all right?
I feel like we'll eventually hear about Satine. I feel like there hasn't been a lot of time for Bo-Katan to get into past stuff.
Yeah, that's fair.
This season, but
too
I think as she begins to, yeah, I feel like as she gets closer relationships with the Armorer or Din, or
maybe she'll
whoever,
start sharing that a little bit more. Yeah,
yeah, maybe she'll start. Maybe she'll show up on the porch of Din's nice little countryside home that he has now, where his little boy is just eating frogs in the front yard.
Yeah.
And they'll
I love
and they'll
him
talk
making the frog
the little
float.
Stuff.
Yeah, it was very similar to, what was it? I think it was Book of Boba Fett, where Grogu and Luke Skywalker are hanging out and he's trying to float the frog.
Yeah.
That was a nice little callback there. But yeah, I as a Bo-Katan fan from Clone Wars and Rebels, this was so cool to see of just like, yeah, this continued struggle of the planet Mandalore and seeing it all, at least for now, come together in a way that feels finally like a success story for Bo-Katan after failing, and you know, other characters failing at trying to bring people together, specifically with the Darksaber. Maybe that's a false thing that they are worshiping, right? And I love the fact that it breaks and what that means, and making kind of new things for the future of the Mandalorian people, and not just like dedicating like all of their time into only the person who wields the Darksaber can lead us, and no, actually like showing the honor and things of that nature that Din was talking about last episode, where he's like, this thing that you love and worship, it doesn't mean anything to me. These are the things that mean a lot to me and mean a lot to the people that I was raised by. So all very cool stuff. But then also, you know, a lot of weird stuff. Remember Jack Black and Lizzo?
Star Wars, baby!
I loved it! I love Jack Black and Lizzo. I love the Buddy Cop episode. That was a good episode. Get wrecked. That was fun as hell.
Carboni, we're wrapping up here. Where can people find you?
You can find me everywhere online at @acarboni, except for on Twitch, where I'm at Anthony Carboni. Twitch, you cowards, it's mine. Give it back to me.
Cowards!
There we go. Well, let us know in the comments below what you thought about the finale to Mandalorian Season 3, what you thought of the season overall, what your theories are for Season 4, Ahsoka, any of the other Star Wars stuff. I would love to see all of that. Thank you for hanging out with us. We love talking Star Wars here at Kind of Funny. Barrett has his video essay for Jedi Fallen Order coming out later today, so you should definitely check that out. But yeah, like I was saying, we will return for Ahsoka in August, so that's going to be a lot of fun. There's nothing in between that, right? show wise?
I don't think so. Because we still don't know when the
Young Jedi Adventures.
That's true. That is true. That's coming out. I don't know if we're gonna be covering that one. Oh, you're right. Visions, May 4th.
Yeah, Visions comes out.
That could be interesting. Maybe. We'll see. Schedule wise might get a little complicated. But anyways, I love you all. Till next time, may the Force be with you.